Astonishing Legends is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Potential savings will vary.
Not available in all states or situations.
Tax season has arrived, and doing taxes without the right help can feel overwhelming. Intuit TurboTax is here now to guide you through it with confidence. Match with a TurboTax full-service expert who handles everything for you from start to finish. Your dedicated expert checks every single deduction and credit to help you get the best possible outcome so you can feel confident you're getting every dollar you deserve. And the best part? You'll see real-time updates on your expert's progress right on your phone while you live your life. Plus, you get unlimited expert help at no extra cost, even on nights and weekends during tax season. Visit TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Full Service Experts. Real-time updates only on iOS mobile app.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, Stranger Danger.
Tonight we're headed up to the Pacific Northwest, specifically a town called Bellingham, Washington. It sits right on the edge of the Salish Sea, that's S-A-L-I-S-H, just a stone's throw from the Canadian border.
Yep, I've been through there a handful of times, a lovely little town. Still have one friend, Chris, who I've known since first grade, who lives there
now.
Wow. Yeah, so...
Okay.
I think he likes it. One thing he told me, it can be a dark, damp, rainy place like much of the west side of the state of Washington. You know, he's been living there, I don't know, 25 years or so. But he said that he was feeling moody every morning when he woke up. And then he realized that it's because there's not enough light there. So he got one of those pairs of glasses I think I first saw them. Yeah, seasonal anxiety disorder. Sad, isn't that fitting? Yeah. And it just shines a daylight temperature light into your eyes. And I think I first saw that on the show Northern Exposure, where people wear those. And he said, like, yeah, it really brightened my mood. So I would play chess online and just wear those for like 30 minutes. And he said, yeah, it definitely works. So it's a dark, dank place, but a lovely town close, as you said, to the Canadian border. And how I knew through it is that the college kids, at least who are going to University of Washington, would easily make a trip into Canada because the drinking age there was 19, not 21.
Ah, there you go.
So so you get a couple of guys in a van and you go get a bunch of Canadian beer. So, but yeah, it's a really cool place. I haven't been there in many years, so I can't account to the current vibe, but definitely a moody, visually moody, evocative place.
Would you say it's stranger than Ohio?
You see, you're back on the Ohio thing. Now, we have nothing against the lovely
thing.
State of Ohio and the lovely folks there.
Hey, I love it. I'm not saying I don't like it.
No,
I love
know.
The strange state.
But no, that's a good question. Is it stranger than any other place? Well, it is one of those things where it's all perspective. Every place, every state, every square inch of ground here has its own strangeness. But I do think, sometimes towns and specific locations will have more odd things happening than other places, but definitely weird things have happened there. All of Washington State is my point. So you think like, oh, nothing ever happens here. It's like, you haven't talked to enough people. Bellingham, as it's described to us currently, is a fascinating collision of worlds, you could say. So as our author will tell us, it's a former logging and coal mining port that then has over the years morphed into a liberal arts college hub with Western Washington University. And like every other state, there's a Western Washington, there's a Central Washington University, where I believe they had the primate lab where Coco was at. So they have one of the best, highest rated primate labs in the country.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Tonight's letter, as it points out, it's also known, at least by somebody who's gone to school there, known for some incredibly dark realities. And there are these dense, isolating woods, and its share of human monsters from some infamous cases in the 1970s.
Yeah, the wild thing is, it is kind of a spooky area when it comes to the serial killer situation, because one of the Hillside Stranglers actually wound up living there in Bellingham. And sadly, he murdered two students, two young women that were attending Western Washington University. When I was a kid, I thought, oh, the Hillside Strangler is one person. It actually turned out to be a couple of cousins
who
had killed a bunch of people in LA then went their separate ways. And this one settled in this town where he killed two more women in the late 70s before he was caught. So there's that connection there in Bellingham. Right. So, I mean, I guess I feel like for me, if I was living in a small town and that was part of its history, I'd probably be a little more nervous just in general.
Well, but, also we know these things run in eras too. And that I can confirm as a kid, because I remember definitely hearing about the Green River Killer.
Yeah.
And then there was another one, the Back Alley Killer, I think they said in Spokane. And so the area did certainly have its era of darkness, which thankfully doesn't seem to have continued on through the generations, but it's always there. I mean, there's always like creepy stories that happen. But yeah, every place has had its weirdness and its dangers.
All right, Forrest, I think it is your turn to read the story tonight.
All righty, here we go. I spent a long time debating whether I would ever send this story in. To this day, it's still one of the creepiest moments of my life. The problem is, I don't feel I am a good enough writer to explain why. It is a hard experience to adequately convey. So, if you manage to make it all the way through my rambling nonsense, I hope it is not a disappointment. 15-ish years ago, I spent four lovely years in Bellingham, Washington, attending Western Washington University. Bellingham is a decent-sized place up near the Canadian border, about 2 hours outside Seattle. It has that delightful, sometimes exhausting, mixture of personalities that come from putting a large, very liberal college in the middle of a working-class, conservative, former logging-slash-fishing port. It has cute historical downtown areas with a small townish feel, full of old-timey brick buildings, beautiful waterfront, and stunning views of the surrounding mountains and thick forests. You know, the kind of woods that the serial killers of Washington State are famous for hiding their victims' bodies in. And rocky beaches where lone tennis shoes with human feet still in them tend to wash on shore with disturbing regularity. It's that sort of hauntingly beautiful place. And while I have a couple of stories of encountering potentially real human monsters during my time in Bellingham, what I want to tell you about is much more otherworldly. At the time, I was living with three other girlfriends within walking distance of campus. The small apartment building was your average college town affair. It sat on a hill, and our apartment was one of only two ground floor units sunk on the backside, accessible only from the recessed parking lot. There were four balconies that lingered above our front door, resulting in the occasional dodging of a Friday night beer bottle knocked over a ledge, and one disgusting experience with a drunken a-hole peeing off the third floor onto my parked car. One Saturday night, two of my roommates, who had the great fortune to be 21, went bar hopping, thus abandoning the still 20-year-old Marie and I to an evening at home of movies and cheap boxed wine. It was fall, so it was dark out, but not late, probably only around 7:30. And the front door, which opened into the living room where Marie and I sat pajama-clad on the sofa, was unlocked. Over the 3 years we had lived there, we were super close to a group of guy friends that lived across the street. the boys would often come over to visit unannounced, mostly to eat our food and take advantage of our hand-me-down big-screen TV. It was such a common occurrence that when we were home, we usually left the door unlocked, allowing them to just walk in, or so if they knocked, instead of having to get off our lazy butts, we could just yell, "It's open!" So when we heard a knock on the door that Saturday night, it should have been a completely normal event. Except it wasn't. Someone knocked at a completely normal-paced interval, but you'd have thought that it was a loud, frantic pounding based on the amount of fear I remember suddenly feeling. Why? I'm not exactly sure, but it's why Maria and I are still talking about it over 15 years later. That night, the knocking had Maria and I just looking at each other in concern, neither of us apparently willing to offer our standard invitation to enter, which to say the least was strange. Honestly, the fact that she looked worried as well, A, made me simultaneously feel slightly better that my irrational fear over a completely normal knock was somewhat justified, and B, also ignited the curiosity killed the cat part of my brain to take some sort of action. Both Marie and I stayed silent as I got up to traverse the short distance to the door, wanting to look out the peephole to see who it was. And more importantly, lock the freaking door. But as I walked toward it, and this sounds so stupid, it felt like time was slowing down. My heart was pounding, adrenaline was pumping. I wanted to run to flip the deadbolt, but I couldn't move any faster than a shuffle. I felt as if whoever was on the other side could see me despite the thick wood between us. That somehow, they were watching me head toward the door with the intent to throw that lock. They knew it, and I was sure they were going to turn that knob and open the door before I could reach it. I had never until that moment understood so clearly what the fight or flight response was. I felt like prey, and there was a predator on the other side of that door. When I reached it, I had this intense sensation that eyes were glaring through the wood, following the progress of my hand as my fingers finally flipped the deadbolt. Even with that accomplished, I remember thinking, completely irrationally, I was going to turn around and whoever it was would somehow now be standing in the living room behind me, despite me having just put a lock between us. That door was not enough to stop them. Marie had reached my side by this point, and we looked at each other, still not saying anything, but having a silent conversation of fear. I'm not sure how much time had passed since the initial knock on the door. A minute? Five? They didn't knock again, and yet we were positive they were still waiting on the other side. I couldn't help myself. My curiosity over this bizarre response I was having temporarily overtook my terror. And I looked out the peephole. A man stood on the other side. He seemed of average height and build. He wore a long, tan, thick wool trench coat. He had on a tie, slacks, and dress shoes. He wore a fedora. He looked like he had stepped out of some old film noir detective movie, complete with the front porch illuminating him like one of those classic scenes under a street lamp in a foggy city at night. I got chills as if someone had poured a cup of cold water down my spine. Here was this man who was dressed in a full men's suit and expensive coat standing at our door in a dark, isolated parking lot at a suburban apartment full of college kids on a Saturday night wearing a casual plaid shirt in a university town in the Pacific Northwest. He made no sense, and it felt deeply, deeply unnatural, dangerous somehow. I've had some experiences with real human monsters, men with dangerous intent that left me scared and with my heart pounding, but none of it ever felt like this. Every fiber of my body was screaming at me with a sense of wrongness. I feel a little silly even writing it out now, but it was as if he felt somehow not human. Like something just pretending to be? I remember feeling stupid, trying to convince myself otherwise. It was just a man. Oddly dressed, yes, as if he stepped out of a different time. but a man nonetheless. Right? So why were we afraid? I couldn't see his eyes under the brim of his hat, but I knew he was aware I was looking at him, my heart pounding in my chest as I pulled away. Marie must have seen my look of panic. I wanted to tell her what I saw, what I felt, but it was as if we were both too scared to make a noise to break the silence, afraid the thing on the other side would hear our whispers, and that would be a mistake. I guess in the end, her curiosity won out too. Maybe we should both stop watching horror movies where the idiots always go to investigate the noise, because Marie looked out the peephole as well. I watched her until she pulled back, eyes wide, tense, and concerned as we continued to stand there terrified for no damn reason. I can't remember now how long we stood there frozen or which one of us finally whispered, "Is he gone?" I can't remember now who was brave enough to look for that second time to make sure he no longer stood there or if somehow we could just both feel when he left. We never heard a car drive away from the parking lot. And these are some very crampy, thin college apartment walls, so we definitely would have. So I guess he just walked away? We tried to explain it to our roommates when they returned. They attempted to be supportive, but definitely didn't get it. We called our friends across the street to see if they had seen the man. They hadn't, and I got the feeling they probably thought Marie and I were being dramatic or had drank too much wine. Over the next few days, we spoke to our neighbors next door on the ground floor and a few of the others that lived above us. Nothing. No one else had seen him. It seems ours was the only apartment door he chose to visit. Marie and I couldn't help but be thoroughly creeped out. Even though we both knew there was no reason to be scared, nothing happened. He didn't pound on the door. In the end, he didn't even knock twice. He never tried to open the door. He never said anything. He just left after standing there for a while. It is out of place, tan trench coat, detective outfit, staring at a closed door that two panic-stricken 20-something women stood frozen behind. What was so scary about that? And that's the problem. I don't know. I would not claim to be a particularly intuitive person who gets vibes or has any kind of heightened sense of awareness. I have definitely stupidly walked way too deep into a few situations before the red flag started bashing me in the head about the danger of the person in front of me. What I am sure of is that both my friend and I's bodies reacted to what should have been an utterly mundane event, with some sort of unexplainable, deep, primal sense of foreboding. I think of it often, and Marie and I still chat about it from time to time. Thankfully, neither of us has seen him again. We definitely don't want to. Though if I am honest with myself, there is that unsolved mystery-loving part of my brain that will always wish, just the tiniest bit, that I had been brave, or stupid enough, to open that door. That, in doing so, I might have some answers. If you made it this far, I thank you for reading my story where nothing happens. For letting me try to explain that the fact that nothing happened is exactly why it still haunts us. I have had a few other spooky and weird things happen in my life, but this remains the only time I experienced something that I can only describe as supernatural. That whatever was behind that door was not a man. Whatever it was simply wrong.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Astonishing Legends is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Potential savings will vary.
Not available in all states or situations.
And now, we return to the shadows of this dead letter.
This is a really great story to me. Mm. I mean, she's like putting it down. Stacy's like, nothing happened. Thanks for listening to my story where nothing happened. But to me, everything happened. This is very, very cool to have this character at your front door. You can't figure out if you should open or not. I think the weirdest part of it for me, or the most intense part of it, is the emotional pause that she and her roommate Marie apparently felt. Just the dread and all of that. That goes with so many stories that you and I have talked about on Astonishing Legends over the years, as well as the Dead Letter Office with Black Eyed Children, right, and Men in Black, and just this vibe of like oppressive emotional feeling that makes you feel scared, or like that thing or that being is going to get into your space no matter what you do.
Right. And it's one of the defining moments. There's no rules here to this. Well, we will be talking about some rules about entering uninvited. I was having a chat with one of our good show friends here, Veronica, about what that feeling is. And perhaps they had seen some post on TikTok, I think, and it was somebody with a condition called megalocornea, where the corneas, or the, I guess the iris part, the color part of the eye, is mm-hmm. extremely large compared to most people. And in some cases, especially when you're kind of squinting, it looks like your whole eye is black. And Veronica was saying, well, maybe that's what people are feeling, or how scared they get when they see somebody, and even if they don't know that they're, you know, the black-eyed kid's lore is, you know, what that's about, they see this person and it kind of unnerves them, and right. they get a sense of fear. And I say, my feeling is that I think this is beyond that. As our story author tonight says, it's like they've been in encounters with some, you know, human dangerous people where they got a bad vibe, and that's certainly the red flag in the pit of your stomach feeling. But this is different. This is like the core of your body. And so I've always talked about that on the show. Like, that's a step beyond where this is extraordinary. This is not just getting weirded out by seeing somebody who's unusual that you never really see. I actually know somebody, I think, I've never asked them, but they may have megalocornea, where the brown part of their eye is larger, it seems, than most folks. And you notice it, but it doesn't creep you out. You know, it's not a weird, like, oh my God, this person's going to just, you know, eat my soul. It's a feeling of like, well, that's unusual, or you don't usually see that. And then, you know, is that part of that uncanny valley feeling where it's something just slightly more unusual than the average? Yeah, if you saw somebody like that, which is a pretty rare condition, even if their eyes appear to be all black when they're smiling or this and that, it doesn't give you that feeling in the pit of your stomach. You might notice it. Some sensitive people might even be weirded out a little bit by it, but it doesn't have that deep in your DNA feeling of fear, of utter just terror. So there's a lot of things going on in this story which are well defined, I think, by our author, and no need for the self-deprecation, because even though they say they might not be a good enough writer to express it, I think it was very well detailed, especially all the elements of the interaction from beginning to end and how time seems to slow down. There was a sense of knowing that this, whatever this thing was on the other side of the door, might even hear their whispers or thoughts or know exactly. It's like they could see them, like they didn't need the door. They could peer into their souls from the other side. And that caused an extra sensory feeling of fear, which again, that's the beyond part. So, but talking about the setting here, one thing I want to say that a lot of our friends and fans are going to notice is that, yes, you do have part of that in the popular zeitgeist, like Twin Peaks, for example.
Right, right.
Of the rainy, weird stuff's happening in the woods. It's very paranormal and supernatural and not all good. The home of the Black Lodge into Canada and, you know, all these kinds of mythical kind of things happening. On the outside, like I said, I've never have experienced that, nor have my friends that have lived there or are from there, other than some of them I know, which seems odd. They can't take the rain. And so I know this girl that had moved down to Southern California where I was working, and found out she was originally from the Seattle area, and just said, yeah, I just couldn't take it. I said, you're from there. She goes, yeah, it just wears on you. Like, I just could not take it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too.
My own experience is that you kind of get used to it, and it's an interesting area for a lot of cultural reasons. But in this case, talking about, you know, that would have been my era as a kid in the 70s and hearing these cases pop up. And, you know, again, it's part of the lore, but it didn't seem any more dangerous than any other part, especially living in LA. Where it's right. like, you don't need a serial killer. You have plenty of regular killers roaming around randomly offing people. So, but in this case, it also reminds me, and I've talked about this case before because they're very similar in feeling and experience to me. I remember the story fairly clearly, and it's two kids that were at their home in a suburban setting, not a lot of other houses on the block, but not rural, okay, just a regular suburban neighborhood. This being, I think, the 80s, when things were a little different. The parents had left the kids at home while they went out to dinner. One was like of babysitting age, like, I don't know, 12 to 14, with a younger brother. And there was a knock at the door. You know, they're entertaining themselves with TV and pizza rolls and things like that. And it wasn't very late. You know, it's like 8, 9 o'clock.
Right.
But there was a knock at the door. And it immediately kind of startled them because nobody should be knocking on their door at that time. It was one of those old-fashioned doors with the three glass panels and the glass is dimpled and probably amber-colored.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'd lived in houses with those.
Right. I think they mentioned that in the story because they could see the top of the hat. And it's like, well, this person's pretty tall. If
right.
we could see, right. you know, their hat in the top window pane or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, they get immediately creeped out, really bad feeling, don't open the door, that kind of thing. And there was some knocking, and the button or the hook on the story was that whoever this person or being was leaves eventually. They go out to check, and it had been snowing very heavily that evening, and especially during, you know, the snow's coming down at an angle. And they go out to look on the porch, and there's no footsteps at all. But
yeah,
somebody was there. Yeah. They could see it. It wasn't just a feeling or just a phantom knock or kids goofing around. Right. It was they opened the door. And yeah, there should have been footprints there. So
in this case,
yeah, there's no evidence of this person having been there other than them seeing them, but nobody else saw them, but the two roommates did. So I love the dual confirmation on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also get the sense of wonder too, because I would have, now I would know to, yeah, grab your camera phone and, and try to get a picture. I've only seen one picture of somebody submitted online. Yes, you never know if these things are real. But somebody who has claimed to at least get a quick shot of somebody they thought was a black-eyed adult.
Folks, if you're listening to this show or you listen to our main show, that's something you should know. Always be ready to take a picture if you can. It's hard. The UFOs, the things that are far away in the sky, that's like impossible, especially when you zoom in and everything. But if you see something right on your front porch, you might be able to get a shot of it before it disappears.
There is something about the phenomenon not wanting to, or it's part of the rules of being recorded. They are not meant to, or you're only supposed to get enough to just to make people doubt you. Like, just, you're never going to get perfect documentation. But often when people go to photograph whatever this overarching phenomena is, it's shy. And it does not want to be seen, or like I said, there are rules where it can't, so it's forced to leave somehow. But we also in the story have the archetypical setup of a very ancient idea of things coming through doorways, passageways, as being metaphorical, but also real physical barriers. And of course, one of the most famous cases, you can think of Passover, where you had to put lamb's blood over your doorway so that the angel of death would pass over you.
Yeah,
and that's where they get the term Passover. So we're talking about the times of Moses. This was known as that you're safe if you stay inside and you don't venture out and you put the lamb's blood over the archway of the door and you'll your house will be passed over. So, yeah, it's about permission, too. I think you could open the door and not give it permission to come inside. But you could maybe, I know, my curiosity is just as piqued as our author here. I would want to open the door. But then again, this is the other curiosity that eats away at me is that I don't know what that feeling is like. And I'm intensely curious about experiencing it. But also, I don't want to be emotionally scarred for the rest of my life either.
Yeah.
But I wonder what that feels like. This is beyond. It's like, yeah, I've seen some really sketchy people. And I've gotten some vibes off of people you and I have met.
Yeah.
They were friendly, but there'd be a moment, I can't describe this, where they kind of look at you and there's something going on there. And it just made me feel like a little more aware, like pay attention to what they're saying and what they're doing, what their actions are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, Scott, what do you think it is? Is this something, is this a Hat Man story? Is this a Men in Black that's also been described Although usually not as intense. When people see the Men in Black, they will get a weird feeling in the pit of their stomach about this person because they don't seem right. But not right. This super intense fear. This seems to go beyond that a little bit, although they were wearing a hat.
Yeah, I mean, it does have a little bit of that vibe, but Stacy's not reporting, I had just seen a UFO. Right. There's none of that precursor stuff that usually goes along with the Men in Black. But the Shadow Man thing, it seems to fit more into. But on the other hand, she's describing like a tan wool trench coat.
A fashion choice, a
so
bold
it's the
one.
Man in, it's not, it's the man in tan or the Tando Man.
I'm picturing a nice London Fog model.
Yeah. I don't know, but I guess like that part of it is just like, were his other black coats at the cleaners? And there's something there about that. I don't know. I guess in the 50s, maybe there were stories of the Men in Black when they first started showing up of not actually wearing black.
Right.
So I think if you do a little digging, but this to me feels a little bit more like the Devil in the Diner, episode that we did of Astonishing Legends way back. But there's a person, and it may even just be a mere mortal, but there's something off about them. And that feeling is coming through to Stacy and Marie. You know, I guess the question is, why was this person on the porch? Like, if somebody's just lost or it's the wrong house, then why are they dressed like that?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. It's a liberal arts college. Maybe somebody was dressed up for a play and they went to pick up a friend and they went to the wrong door.
Right? Maybe. You know? Because there's ways to look at this which are still extraordinary. If it's, say it was a serial killer or a budding serial killer, just kind of working out the kinks and trying to meet folks, showing up at the door and you get a bad feeling, it doesn't usually fit most of the MO, I would say, about how people have described encountering people who turned out to be murderers, in that usually they will break into your place in the middle of the night. It's not that early because, again, you could be seen leaving and entering the place. It doesn't really fit that crime MO, like I was saying, of somebody appearing strange or more noticeable. You want to be, you don't want to be recognizable in any kind of way, or you're doing something unusual to throw people off. I think it was, I can't remember if it was The Onion Field, but it was James Woods movie where he had put this little mole on his cheek that was fake. And he was talking to his crime buddy. He said, you notice anything about my appearance? He goes, no, you look the same, except you got that mole. He says, exactly. And if you meet somebody, he said, they're going to forget a lot of the other features you have, but they're going to concentrate on that mole you had, which I don't normally have. And so there's other things that people, if you're smart, you will throw them off. But this looks conspicuous. You know what I'm saying? The dress and just kind of not right for a college town. Maybe you're a traveling salesman. It's just a weird getup and doesn't really fit most of the other MOs, I would say, about murderers who have eventually been caught, who turned out to be like really regular seeming guys. Fathers, business people, even respected in the community. They kind of blend in. That's the idea. You would never suspect them. So this seems too conspicuous to appear at the door.
Yeah, you're right. It's too affected. And I mean that with an A, not an E.
Right,
affected.
Right,
there's a lot going on here. The other thing that's really fascinating to me is the way she wraps up the story. She's like, whatever this was, it was not human. And this is something that's come up before in other shows. And things we talked about where people get this feeling that this thing is not human. And I always say that, well, when that's happening, you know, the human mind, the brain, our brain is programmed to determine when another person is a threat to you. The whole fight or flight, all of that stuff, all that processing that we do, it's part of our evolution. So when you get that feeling, when you're looking at something that looks like a human, but you have a very distinct feeling that it's not, that's your body, that's your mind saying you're in danger.
Exactly.
So you need to figure out a new plan.
Right.
And for them to feel that through the door, through looking through the peephole and just over the course of this experience. And of course, you know, maybe it's just danger from an attacker. It's a physical attacker. Or it's, you know, somebody bad like Brian Koberger or whatever that
guy.
Or though, is it something more? Is it not human because it's a person who is, you know, a sociopath or a psychopath and who's maybe having mental health issues? Or is it not human because it's really not human?
And once again, I just talked about this on a recent DLO. It's going back to Charles Hoyfort's Wild Talents, which he wrote about. And that innate sense as human beings, as a species, since our cave people days to sense when there's some danger. And so again, for me, this is illustrative of the various levels in that this is a dangerous person. So that's what I was kind of talking about. Our friend, good friend, Mark DeAndre, has a great weird story about working in a video rental store, I think in the early 80s or sometime in the 80s.
Yes.
I'll retell this. I've only done it a couple of times over the years. But I think the story goes that he was there just as a regular employee of the video store. And this guy would come in. He was hired, I think is kind of a charitable hire, to paint some signs because he was kind of an artist. And he had a girlfriend that came in with him, I think. And those two would get, you know, instructions from the owner, the manager to like, yeah, we need these kind of signs advertising these movies and just, you know, 2-for-1 rentals or whatever. And he always got a weird vibe. I mean, this guy was kind of disheveled, shaggy looking, shabby in appearance and maybe a little dirty. And just, this guy's, there's something off. There's a weird energy about this guy and his girlfriend. And there's just something not right about it. But nothing dangerous, not like he's going to shoot up the store. And it later turns out this guy was an associate of Charles Manson.
Right.
And they shared that weird vibe. And Mark was like, oh, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Is that he's also carrying that weird culty, strange vibe. And I don't ever know what happened to that guy or even if Mark does. I think he just stopped working there after a while. But like, that's one level. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's one level, like stranger danger. There's another level that's non-human. And that's what we're talking about here tonight, is that this guy is not just not right for this time and location. This is not right for reality and humanity. Like, this is supernatural in a way. And so I think that's the other level. That's kind of what I'm talking about, is that we have that red flag that goes up when you meet somebody who's kind of questionable. And so many folks, we've talked about this quite a bit, where they ignore that. And that's when they get into trouble. Or they listen to those signs and it's like, yeah, I avoided that person. It turns out they did this. I think our friend Roger also, I was thinking about other states with serial killers.
Right.
So Roger, being from Indianapolis, worked in a bookstore and he had a small chat with this guy about some book or whatever. When he was much younger. And I think he said there was kind of an odd vibe from this guy. Turns out he was one of Indiana's most famous serial killers who preyed on young men. And so like, was he scoping me out? What was going on here? But usually, like I said, there's a different MO where they approach you. Sometimes they get to know the person and that lets their guard down and they invite them to the second location. So here, this again, this is not lining up for me as a potential killer, although, yeah, it could have been that, especially if it's just physical, it's a person, there's no black mist smoke swirling around them, everything else seems normal and you get that bad vibe. This case, I will believe our author here in that there was something just way out of bounds with this guy and also experienced the same thing with their roommate. But I like the psychic connection here where it's just, I can see you through the door. I know what you're thinking of, and I could feel your fear through the door, and that was enough for them. Whether you let me in or not, I got what I was coming here for, which was that energy vibe. But if you open the door, it's a bonus treat for me. And I wonder what would have happened if, heaven forbid, there was something bad that happened, but how that would have played out if they had let him in.
Yeah.
Would it have been like a black-eyed kids or black-eyed adult scenario where you let them in because you want to be nice, and it's like, oh, it's very cold outside and damp, come on in for some cocoa, and nothing happens. They ask some weird questions and eventually you get a bad vibe, even more so, and you want them to leave, and they do, but you experience bad luck or bad health. What are the side effects of that?
The other thing in this story that jumped out at me that was, I thought was kind of big, was that she seemed to imply that there was a little bit of, she didn't say missing time, but she wasn't sure how long they stood there kind of staring at the door, which
is that the trickster element?
Not to freak you out, Stacey, but that's a kind of a textbook, like things happened and you lost 10 minutes of your life or more and you don't know. You weren't aware of it.
Well, again, you can make a connection to an abduction, an alien abduction scenario where there's a screen memory or screen visual of something more human, but it wasn't really human, but you know, like, this isn't going to end up well if you go along with this. And what was this being here? Again, just generally non-human. So you could make a connection to alien abduction, or is it some other kind of strange intruder, as our friend David Weatherly would write about and document?
Yeah.
Because there's all kind of a whole host of folks that people have encountered, which gave them a very also horrifying feeling with lasting effects. And those are hard to categorize, but that book is fascinating if you want to learn more about just all the variations of weird people, quote unquote.
Yeah, that's a good callback. Strange Intruders by David Weatherly, folks. Look for that book on Amazon or wherever. Yeah, it's you can find it.
That goes a little further where people have more of an interaction with this physically and in person, face to face. And that may be where the story goes from there. Anyway, this was seems more directed and pointed, and then you do wonder, like, why are we targeted? As she says in the letter, why was it our doorstep this guy appeared at? Is there some reason there? Or is it just totally random and he saw a light on? Maybe since the door was open already? You know, who knows? But yeah, it is one of those curiosity things where have they just interacted, opened the door, say, hello, how may I help you? What would have gone on from there? And then actually seeing the face and the eyes that were obscured by the brim of the hat.
Well, there is a very specific kind of bravery required to admit that a story where you think nothing happened is the most terrifying moment of your life. The mystery of who or what was standing out there in the cold is far better, probably, than whatever the answer might have been. As Forrest likes to say, sometimes we have to live with the question. Stacy, thank you for sending your letter into the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Forrest Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Carissia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bowler. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of the show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
Astonishing Legends is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Potential savings will vary.
Not available in all states or situations.
When Kohler, the global design leader in luxurious kitchen and bath products, came to me and said, "Martha, we need an ambassador for our timeless, elegant, durable cast iron products." I said, "I'm in. Now let me see the factory." Weeks later, I was suited up in coveralls and work boots, walking through their Kohler, Wisconsin cast iron foundry. I stood next to the molten iron furnace, saw the hand applying enamel, and touched the gorgeous finished products waiting to be sent out into the world. Since 1883, Kohler cast iron products have been forged and finished by the incredible craftspeople right in Kohler, Wisconsin. I'll tell you, I gained a newfound respect and appreciation for Kohler's cast iron craftsmanship. So now, I'm lending my discerning stamp of approval to my most beloved Kohler cast iron products for their durability, beauty, and timelessness. Shop my Kohler cast iron favorites curated on Kohler.com. Bring the warmth, character, and enduring style of these timeless products into your kitchens and bathrooms. As the Kohler cast iron ambassador, I say, long live cast iron.
Doing taxes the old way meant handing everything off and just hoping things were moving. But now, you can feel confident your taxes are being handled right with Intuit TurboTax. Now you match with a TurboTax full-service expert. Just upload your documents right in the app, and boom, they take it from there. Start to finish, you've got a dedicated expert working your return. They check every deduction and credit to help you get the best possible outcome, so you can feel confident you're getting every dollar you deserve. And now you're not guessing what's happening, you're seeing it happen. TurboTax gives you real-time updates on your expert's progress while you go about your day. Run errands, grab a coffee, live your life. You're always in the loop. And if a question pops up, you get unlimited expert help at no extra cost, even on nights and weekends during tax season. Taxes are finally transparent, easier, and handled. Visit TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax full-service experts. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile app.
My perfect day has sand, salt water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Nothing is everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Rewards programs are a lot like pop culture. They can be hard to keep up with. But with Venmo's new rewards program, Venmo Stash, rewards are so easy because the more you do, the more you get. And you choose the bundle of brands you get cash back at. It's giving fiscal queen. It's giving star. It's giving up to 5% cash back at your favorite brands. Just pick a bundle of your go-to spots to shop with your Venmo debit card and earn cash back at them. Do more, get more with Venmo Stash. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. Venmo Stash bundle terms and exclusions apply. Max $100 cash back per month. See terms at venmo.me/stash terms.
It's tax season, and by now, we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.